Hey, Peak Pals, before we get into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that after the episode, you'll hear an exclusive conversation between Dan Kagan, country manager at Okta, and I about the future of artificial intelligence and identity. The conversation was an eye-opening perspective into some of the identity and cybersecurity concerns posed by AI, and most importantly, what Okta is doing to address them. I really enjoyed this fascinating conversation with Dan, and I know you will too, so remember, please tune in at the end of this episode to hear more about how AI is impacting cybersecurity. It's a great conversation. Hey! I'm Brett Chang.
And I am Jay Rosenthal, and this is your Peak Daily for Friday, April 26, 2024, where we cover the biggest stories in Canadian and global business, finance, and tech, all in less than 7 minutes.
All right, Jay, Tim's has been in the news over the past few weeks, and we thought that there was nothing left that Tim Hortons could do that would surprise us, especially after the pizza, but we were wrong. To celebrate its upcoming 60th anniversary, Tim's is staging a musical in Toronto called, this is no joke, Jay, The Last Timbit. The show is loosely based on a real-life incident in which a group of strangers were stuck at a Timmy's near Sarnia while waiting out a fierce snowstorm, featuring actual Broadway actors and with the backing of Come From Away super producer Michael Rubinoff. This is a real deal show. It actually sounds a lot like Come From Away. It's like this is Tim Hortons 9/11. Hopefully the reviews for it are better than the ones Tim's got for the flatbread pizza, which we shared a review for on this podcast a few weeks ago. What do you think, Jay? You gonna go see it?
Honestly, when I read it, it sounded like a bad idea. But when I heard you talk about it, it sounded like a good idea. Like, this is not the worst idea for a musical, certainly in Canada, certainly to celebrate 60th anniversary. And whoever thought of this, very creative. I'm down for it.
One thing I gotta say is just a complete kudos to the Tim Hortons marketing team. They're constantly in the news, and we're not a particularly PR-friendly publication, Jay. You know, we have to talk about this because it's good content. So they're producing good stuff. So kudos to them. I bet you, here's my take, I bet you this is going to be good. I bet it's going to be very good, surprisingly good, and going to keep it, and it's going to do like a tour, and it's going to be very successful.
Yeah, it'll have a run longer than Cats.
Come on, Jay. Don't go there. You know, I was in Cats. In grade 9 at my high school, I was in the musical Cats, and so it's near and dear to my heart. I don't think it'll be as good as Cats, but that's saying a lot.
Brett, I saw you in that production. Just kidding, but I'm sure you were brilliant. Brett, aside from you in Cats and this Tim Hortons musical, which I am kind of trying to see, what do we have for Peak Pals today?
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me, Jay. For our first story, Honda is the latest entrant into Canada's EV arena. For our second story, Canada's got a GDP per capita problem, and our big picture.
For our first story, like a rapper officially releasing a leaked diss track, Honda has dropped a long-awaited project that's making waves throughout the industry. What is the new project, Brett?
So Honda officially announced its $15 billion electric vehicle EV investment plan in Ontario, with designs to build four new EV plants in the province. The federal government touted the move as the largest auto investment in Canada's history.
Love it. The feds are expected to grant Honda up to $2.5 billion in tax incentives, including under the brand new EV supply chain investment tax credit.
Ontario is also expected to chip in up to $2.5 billion by covering certain costs for the plant and offering up cold, hard cash.
Now to zoom in. A full-fledged EV manufacturing plant in Alliston that will crank out 240,000 vehicles a year and an accompanying battery plant will also be built in Alliston. The other two plants are factory making cathode active materials, CAMs, and a factory making separators, both of which power EV batteries.
Now, the CAM plant, the CAM, is a joint venture with South Korea's POSCO Chemicals, while the separator plant is a venture with Japan's Asahi. I hope it's not related to the beer, or maybe it is. Maybe that's okay.
Maybe it is.
Kasane.
Love that.
Neither have locations yet.
Yeah, and it matters because there's been no shortage of EV announcements over the past year, but they've been focused exclusively on EV battery production. Honda's plants will be the first ones to bring a fully integrated EV supply chain to Canada, from cathodes to chassis.
But while EV sales continue to rise, broader interest appears to be on the decline. Autotrader.ca's annual EV interest report found that 46% of Canadians were interested in buying an EV, but that's down from 68% in 2022, mainly due to the cost and performance concerns of current models. For our second story, even with AI tools, highly caffeinated beverages, and a roster of podcasts eager to tell us how to work smarter, not harder, that's not this podcast, Jay, but there's many of those out there, Canadians are in a bit of a productivity slump.
Yeah, here's what's driving the news, Brett. Canada's economic output per person has fallen below its long-term trend by 7%, around $4,200 per person, according to a new report by Statistics Canada.
From 1981 to the pandemic, Canada's GDP per capita, a widely used measure of a country's economic prosperity, grew by 1.1% every year, but it fell sharply during COVID and has yet to recover.
And it matters because GDP per capita is a fancy way of describing how big the average Canadian slice of the country's economic pie is. So when it starts shrinking, or I guess not growing, it's a sign that our quality of life is slipping.
Countries like Norway, Switzerland, and Iceland that boast high GDP per capita also land near the top of quality of life rankings.
It's happening because GDP per capita growth in Canada is mostly driven by productivity. And as you might have heard from the Bank of Canada and almost every economist in the country recently, Canada's experienced something of a productivity crisis.
In the four decades prior to the pandemic, increases in productivity accounted for 93% of the growth in Canada's real GDP per capita.
Experts say a rapidly aging workforce, an influx of newcomers working lower-paying jobs, and a lack of businesses investing in workers have all contributed to flagging productivity.
Next, with the number of Canadians over 85 expected to roughly triple over the next two decades, the Canadian economy is set to have a big hole in its workforce and, with it, a significant productivity hurdle to clear.
And for our big picture, bleak outlook sparks Meta sell-off. Shares in Meta slid 10% yesterday after CEO and recently chain guy, you know, he's wearing like cool clothes, Mark Zuckerberg told investors during the company's earnings call that their AI bets would take years to bear fruit. Zuck added that in spite of cost-cutting campaign last year, spending on AI and mixed reality was going to increase in the next few years.
Amazon Inc.'s NHL streaming deal. Rogers and the NHL have agreed to sell the exclusive streaming rights to all Monday night hockey games to Amazon, marking the league's first exclusive broadcast deal with streaming service in Canada. The deal, which is the latest in a string of pacts between pro sports leagues and streamers, will cover the next two seasons.
Canadian screenwriter authorized strike. Screenwriters, I guess. For the first time in its 33-year history, the Writers Guild of Canada has authorized a strike, with 96.5% of members voting to hit the picket line if a new deal with the Canadian Media Producers Association isn't reached. Points of contention in negotiations have been AI protections, higher pay, and staffing guarantees for writers' rooms.
Peak Pals, thanks for making us the most listened to business news podcast in Canada.
If you got a second, why not follow this podcast on your app of choice and leave us a review.
And if you want more Peak, make sure to subscribe to our daily newsletter at readthepeak.com.
Have a great day, Peak Pals.
When you give me shockwaves.
Hey, Dan, thank you so much for joining us on the Peak Daily today. I'm thrilled to have you on. Dan, just to kick things off, would love to have you introduce yourself and your role at Okta.
Absolutely. So Dan Kagan, I'm the Senior Vice President and Country Manager for Okta Canada. I've been with the company just over 2 years.
Amazing. Now, I would love to kind of kick off just having a bit of a discussion around AI. I would love for you to tell us a bit more about the survey. You know, amidst all of the buzz that's happening around AI, what did you find the most surprising?
The real, you know, when I look at province by province, coast to coast, the consistent theme is we're just not ready to fully understand the impacts of AI and cybercrime. I think as a culture, just Canada in general, it's a one in five situation. So we're looking at about 20% of Canadians feel that they have what they need educationally and just overall worldly experience to identify risks with AI and cybercrime. So that was quite telling, actually. They have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, that's for sure. Look, I think almost every Canadian would know at least one person in their lives that's been a victim of cybercrime. So it's definitely prevalent. Now, what's one piece of advice you wish more people knew about protecting their identity online?
I think there's a couple of ways to look at it, right? So Brett, I've done a couple of interviews recently, and I've also been unfortunately involved in two cyber attacks in the last 3 weeks.
Wow.
And when you look at the different digital footprints that we have in Canada, you have your online presence, and then you have your social presence. Historically, there were two very different attackers, right? Now we're starting to see that the old ways, right? I mean, 2 days ago, I got called by TD Bank saying that my card was fraudulently used in the United States 5 times before 5 a.m. So that was luckily able to just shut that down and not be charged for it. And then weeks before that, My parents were elderly and aging. They got a call, which they assumed was my son, that he required financial, some sort of financial support from them in order to get out of jail. Now, I submit to them that my son was sitting right beside me. He works for Okta, and he was in the same boardroom as me. So I said, I could promise you he's not in jail, and he's right here. And my mom swore up and down that it was his voice, his inflection. But not only that, it was also the pet names that they used for each other. They knew those, right? Which was a very, very strong connection and indicator that this quite possibly could have been my son. So the threat actor was really, really good in this situation. So very, very scary times.
Wow, that's terrifying. And obviously cybersecurity, it's not just an issue for us personally, but professionally as well. Why should we care about protecting work credentials?
Work credentials and personal credentials have literally morphed into the same. When you think about your footprint personally and your footprint at work, 80% of the time, you're sharing passwords. I know I historically did. So my banking password would be my login credentials, which is usually a pet name, a personal name, a wife, a spouse, significant other, a child, a birth date. I mean, the randomness is really not that random. So when you look at the way organizations today that are just using a password focus, there is the same threat actor that could attack you personally and professionally, which is why things like MFA, multi-factor authentication, AMFA, and so many different authentication methods, and going what we're now calling passwordless, using biometrics, using different type of tokens, is really, really foolproof now. And we embody that here at Okta. We have gone passwordless, and we have been very, very comfortably not attacked from a password perspective.
So you've alluded to going passwordless. I know a lot of people have probably heard that term, but would love to get into what that actually means and how this type of authentication enhances data security and can help protect our information.
I mean, passwordless really, really takes the thinking out of it. I mean, how many times, there's a few. I'm going to take you on a different spectrum. How many times have you forgotten your passwords? How many times have you had to reset your password? And I'll be very, very transparent. Every time you reset a password, you're opening yourself up to impacts of the negative side, right? Because you're going in, you're re-authenticating, you're going in and you're creating a new password, you're going in, and any given time, a threat actor could be integrating into that and taking that data and using it for whatever it is that they want to use it for. The other thing is that going passwordless keeps the consistency on the security level at the corporation level, which means that I can control it. It's no longer user-based authentication. This is now passwordless. We own that, right? Through multi-factor authentication, biometrics, you get it locked down at the corporate level, which takes a lot of the guesswork out, right? And it takes a lot of that levy off of shared services or IT organizations and help desk that spend literally 60% of their days helping people with what? Passwords. Right? So think about the cost analysis, the cost savings, the inherent intrinsic value that you're getting back at an organizational level, and the ability for a CISO to sleep at night.
A big theme of this conversation has been not only cybersecurity today, but cybersecurity in the future, especially in the face of AI. Why is identity important in the age of generative AI?
I mean, we're seeing threat actors all over the place now, right? Being able to secure your social side of the day-to-day is so critical, because that's where all the fuel and the data is coming from. The Instagrams, Facebooks, any of the other social platforms. We're in an age, and I've said this a few times, Brett, we're in an age of likes and followers, right? I'm a father of three. My two daughters have very public profiles, which allows anybody from any part of the world to be able to look at a social profile, look at social media content, and then download it or repurpose it for their own use, right? That brings voice print, that brings video, that brings a history of names and contacts. And then they're looking through your contact details, and the first thing they look at is last name to last name, and then they go to that, and then they create a whole other profile, right? Or your identity ends up being impacted by it. So generative AI is a new platform. If you look at Canada in general, I mean, Trudeau, our prime minister, has put out a $2.4 billion budget for AI in Canada to drive and build a whole AI motion. But when you think about that, he's adding $200 million of that to promote it. But we're only putting $50 million of it to detect fraud against it. So if you think about that, that's our governments. But if you look at organizations that I've been interacting with and starting to talk to about AI, they're in the same boat. Yeah, we're going deep, we're going hard with AI, but we don't really have a lot of invested on the security layer. So it's a pretty consistent pattern from government, private sector, public sector, and so on. So I think we've just tipped the scales of where we need to start driving awareness and a deeper level of investment.
You've obviously had a lot of experience both personally and professionally with cybersecurity. We know Okta's had some challenges recently with security. What are you doing to resolve it?
I think in general, there's a couple of key things that we're doing as an organization today. Number one, we are working on our own infrastructure. That has been very, very big part of making sure that our customers feel secure. Championing, you know, best practices to ensure customers are best protected. We're elevating our industry just in general to be more protected from identity attacks. And again, you know, we've never wavered from providing market-leading identity products and services. And hardening our corporate infrastructure, Brett, was number one. And I'm sure you saw Todd, our co-founder and CEO, said that he was putting external on hold to focus on internal. And I think we've done just that through acquisition, through our own internal looking and finding and handling historical attacks that have happened to us. We've saved over 2 million attacks to our customers on our platform. Think about that.
Wow.
Right? That is a lot, right? And our infrastructure has never been more secure. And we continue to endeavor to invest in R&D development in general, but not just externally for our customers and our road mapping, but also internal, our own governance to make sure that everything that we do is secure, right? It's in the zero trust era. That's just the way we have to be.
This is definitely a frightening conversation, Dan, but it's great to hear all the work that Okta is doing to keep your customers' information and data safe. Thanks again for joining us, Dan. I really enjoyed this.